Before I start this presentation, my co-author and my, who happens to be my postdoctoral advisor, Irka, is presenting parallelly, and I have been obligated to tell all of you to go there. So I promise I will be happy, hopefully. So let's see. I want to talk today about an analysis of classification schemes of soils for hydrologic purposes. Now, this is one of those unfunded projects, so it's just for pure fun that I try to do. So why is classifying and grouping soils, why is it important? Because it is often the first step before we do anything, any kind of modeling. It is often the first step, and it is often the step that we often ignore. You know, we take the status quo and we go ahead and we run with it. And so we need to kind of take a look at, does it really make sense the way we classify and group the soils in a horizontal fashion, in the vertical fashion, you know, how? So that's probably one of the very important things that we need to take a look. And why is it again important? It's also important because all these hydrological models are calibration dependent. Now, probably groundwater modelers will tell that the best. I mean, they completely depend on calibration. Now, if you classify your soils in probably not a very optimal way, then you're trying to fit pants, you know, that's for a different person. You know, you come up with a different estimate of these calibrated parameters that probably don't make any physical sense. So it is very important to start right and to look at how best we can optimize the soils from this point of view. Then number three, why is it again important? Because it provides a pathway for linking what the big eye from the sky sees with what we measure, right? I mean, what satellites give us is large scale, large grid information that needs to be associated with what we measure in the field. Now, in the field, we are going to have spatial distributions. We're going to have heterogeneity in the vertical, side. So we need to somehow be able to group these things together spatially and vertically and somehow link what the satellites are telling us. So in that way, classifying and grouping soils are important. So as a part of this effort, if you look at it, traditionally, at least in the U.S., we use this kind of classification. We have 12 groups, clay, sandy clay, you know, blah, 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 and then we have 12 of these beautiful straight lines. I always was curious why they are so straight, because nothing is straight in nature. Everything is curved, you know, in a highly nonlinear space. So, but this is how we start our modeling. This is how we go ahead and we chart out a plan with any of our models. So, to study this last year, I kind of tried to see if we could use some hydraulic functions, you know, like things like field capacity, you know, water content, hydraulic conductivity, you know, make things that make physical sense to kind of group these soils in the most optimal way. So we had this paper in WRR, and we had come up with this kind of classification. Again, it comes up, it looks like 12 groups is the optimal thing. I didn't want to name them clay because it kind of gives them it misleads you. So I just named them as A1, A2, A3, A4 from the sand side, B1, B2, B3, B4 from the silt side, and C1, C2, C3, C4 from the clay side. Now what is interesting here is the loam is gone, right? Loam is, so what I inferred is when they tried to make the soil texture triangle, this loam group was this kind of a thing that nobody wanted. None of these groups wanted it, you know. So they just said, okay, you don't belong to anybody, we make a group for you, you know. So it's probably the origin for loam. So we made up this classification. Now, again, these lines look straight. I'm not saying that they don't look straight, but there is a lot of wiggle room for these rooms, for these lines, because there is a lot of uncertainty associated with it. So in our paper, we came up with this, is that zone that you see, that is the wiggle room for these lines. They could have, those lines could be anywhere in that zone, and it still would be okay. You know, so those white areas are the ones which are actually belong to that group, right? The gray areas are the ones which could be in any group, depending on what data set you get, right? So So this was what we had done. So my objective in this project was to see how optimal are they. So let's take a case of a vertical flow. Yeah. So when you group a bunch of soils and then you say, and then you want to say, oh yeah, this textural group, this average value for the textural group works well for this soil, then you're basically saying that two aspects of flow are being treated well. First is the static features. What are the static features? It is what is the cumulative infiltration? What is the net change in the water storage in the soil profile? What you're trying to tell is, when you say that this textural group represents this soil well, that means the average parameters for this texture actually come close to giving you the same cumulative infiltration values and change in water storage, right? And the second aspect, what you're trying to imply is the dynamic features are conserved. What is the dynamic features? You could take two different soils, end up with the same cumulative infiltration and change in water storage. However, what's going to be different in those two is the way that it's achieved. So if you look at the water content change with time, the curve may have a different slope, right? So when you say that this texture, this average value for this texture represents any soil in that domain, you are telling that the static features and the dynamic features are conserved. So this is what I wanted to investigate. So my objectives here are, how much improvement, if any at all, can be achieved in hydrologic models by simply improving soil classification? So I considered my soil hydraulic triangle with the soil texture triangle. And what soil classes do we see the most improvement in? Now, if you see these two, the sand is pretty much the same. You know, the sand portion is almost same. You know, it's the rest of the areas where it's all messed up. So I want to see which textures or which hydraulic classes actually show the most improvement. So the way we do it is, I take a 100-centimeter soil profile. Now, it's all in my computer domain. I'm not going into the field or anything like that. So I just take a 100-centimeter soil profile. I just perform a simple infiltration study for a given time period for each of the soils in the textural triangle. Now, if I divide the whole triangle into 1% increments of sand, silt, clay, I get 5,151 points. Now, what I do is I run an infiltration experiment for a unit precipitation for each of those soils. Then I see to which hydraulic class and textural class it belongs. And then I use the average value for that class and see how closely they come, right? So, similarly, I do it for the hydraulic class too. So if you do that, after you do that, then you see how closely are the static features represented, which is basically the cumulative infiltration and change in water storage, and how closely are the dynamic features of the flow represented, which is how the flux is changing with time. The schematic shown above basically shows you flux and time change at any node in the 100-centimeter profile. Now, that red line could be any given soil, and the green line could be the texture or the hydraulic class that is associated with that particular soil. Now, you want the gray area between the two to be as small as possible. That is when your textural class actually does a good job of representing that particular soil, right? So that is the dynamic aspect of representation. Now, so what we try to do is do that. If you do that for each of the soils, everywhere in the triangle, I used Rosetta database, by the way, for getting the Van Gunsten parameters. If you do that, now you can get these differences, and then you can estimate what is the relative error in each of the three, cumulative infiltration, water storage, and flux, between the soil and the associated class, right? So it's a lot of statistical gimmicks. I don't want you to get too worried about that. So what I'll show you in the next graph is this. So bottom is sand, the horizontal axis is sand, the vertical axis is clay, and the color map is basically a percentage improvement, right? If you just take a soil and classify it by using hydraulic triangle as opposed to textile triangle, you can go as much as 2%, right? Just by reclassifying, no new models, no new equations, just grouping it in a different fashion, you can improve your model estimates by 2%. And the green is the area where the hydraulic class does a better job. Now you'll see throughout the triangle, you have a larger green space, right? Which tells you that the hydraulic triangle actually classifies better, you know, as opposed to a textural, from a net infiltration perspective at least. So if you, again, take a look at water storage, you see the same thing. Now, there are some areas where, you know, it doesn't do, but you have to consider all these three, aspects, right? Similarly, if you look at flux, you'll see that hydraulic class can go as much as 7%, you know? So, that I think is very important, you know? And the areas are also, you know, you see more green than red, you know, which tells you that the static features and the dynamic features that you want to be represented well by a class for a soil, you know, are better done when you use soil hydraulic triangle. So then I thought, okay, how do I do this for a variety of combinations? You know, you have all these soils in the world. This is just a simple one vertical infiltration, right? So how do I go about it? Then I looked into how this whole earth is classified as a function of precipitation and infiltration and evapotranspiration. Now, apparently in ecology, they have a scheme wherein they divide this whole earth based on purely precipitation and evaporation. Now, that they call as the Holdridge life zones. So if you like to take a look at the Holdridge life zones, they basically say that temperature and rainfall are the most important factors of an ecosystem. Now, you could classify this whole earth based on two factors, annual precipitation and potential evapotranspiration ratio, right? If you just take these two factors and then you can classify, you'll see that more or less there is a similarity in the way the flora and the fauna evolve. Now, this varies across latitudes and also altitudes. So, you know, you can have a beautiful variation of these Holdridge life zones, you know, within a square kilometer area, you know, because it could be just a simple slope. You could see all these changes. So that's what we did. So this is just an example. Temperature, latitude, you know, you see all these variations. So again, potential evaporation ratio is 1. Below it, it's all dry. Above it's all moist. So what I did is I just took the average value for each of these groups, the evapotranspiration values, as well as the average precipitation values for each of these groups, just plugged it into my 100 centimeter profile. You see? The profile that I had ran for all the 5,151 soils. Now, if you do that, and the way I named it is 1A, 1B, 1C. So, as the numbers increase, you are basically telling that the precipitation is increasing. As you go from imply that the precipitation is increasing, the numbers imply the evapotranspiration is increasing. So, you know, you go towards the equator as you go from top to bottom, right? So, if you take the average evapotranspiration precipitation values and then you plug them in, you will see that the relative error in net infiltration, the same thing we did before, right? It varies anywhere from 0.5% to 4%, right? Same is the case with water storage. You see a downward trend. The downward trend is telling us that as you get more and more wetter, as the soils get more and more wetter, and there's more and more evapotranspiration in the climate, you're going to see that the hydraulic triangle would do a better job of classifying soils. That's basically the summary of that, right? Similarly, if you take a look at the flux, it's the same thing. So the conclusion is, simply by rethinking the way we group soils, we can achieve a small but yet an important improvement in our hydrologic models. And since we are so calibration dependent, I think it is it's time we take a real time we take a look at it again. You know, the way we start our approach.
Maybe time for one quick question. Okay, Christine.
Well, I don't. We do reclassify structure, but how is it represented in the modeling world? I mean, how? I think, from my limited understanding of this whole subject, what I see is textures are a lot more taken into account as opposed to the structure, right? So,
is that a good idea?
It's not a good idea. It is definitely not a good idea. I mean, if you put a big hole in the soil, no matter if it's clay, it doesn't matter, right? So, yeah, you're right. You know, structure is very important, but it is not represented. A larger reason being, there is no proper way to quantify structure. You know? In the models, at least.
EPA classification does have structure quantified in the categories, and it's actually very useful, and you can incorporate it into how to develop models.
Maybe we can leave it for a discussion session.